At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
You're listening to another episode of Lords of Limited with your hosts Ben Wernie and Ethan Sachs.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Lords of Limited. My name is Ben Wernie, and joining me on the line is Ethan Sachs. Ethan, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing great, man. These are my final minutes of a man of my 20s. I'm spending them with you, sir.
Yeah, happy birthday. Your birthday's tomorrow, turning the big 3-0.
Yeah, turning the big 3-0 tomorrow. This is also another big week for me. This is my second wedding anniversary was this past week.
Holy cow, you're such a grown-up.
I am, yeah, well, and yet I have a magic podcast, so it's, you know, a little bit of balance.
Yeah, I live in the dream.
Yeah, for sure. You're just a busy boy these days. How was your week?
Yeah, my week was a little insane. The head director of our marching band left the band in absence to go get in touch with Jesus. He was on a religious retreat this weekend, so I had to do rehearsals by myself, and then we took the band to our first marching band contest this weekend on Saturday and ended up grand champion, so that was a
crap.
Good result. Yeah.
Congrats, man.
Yeah, it was very cool, very fun, good result for the kids and the parents. It's nice to start the season off with high morale.
Yeah.
Then we had a parade this afternoon, the Paoli Fall Festival parade, so right outside my apartment door with the town square was hopping.
Awesome. Well, that's good. It's a positive result for some hard work.
Yeah, very cool. And it was nice, too, that, you know, it went well since I was a little stressed because the head director wasn't there, so.
Yeah.
Yep.
Have you had any time for the magics this week?
I have had a little bit of time for the magics this week. I've done 2 drafts. I did 1 HOU draft and 1 Modern Cube draft that I still haven't finished. I'm 1-1 in that. So, yeah, let's check in on the trophy leaderboard update.
Great. Okay, so I have cracked 200 drafts.
Oh, my God.
So 202 drafts, still at a 68% win rate, 388 to 184, and I have 59 trophies still in third place, though the place number doesn't really mean anything, as, like, you know, people have stopped drafting the format as regularly and have moved on to Cube, etc., but I'll take it.
Sure it does. That means you're persistent. That means you stuck it out, man.
That's right. There you go. How about you?
I have done 1 draft since we last talked, but it was a trophy, so I ended on a nice, even 25 trophies out of 90 drafts, and my overall record was 180-82 for a 68.7% win rate, which I'm going to round up to 69%.
Yeah, as you should. That is great, man. That's a really good win rate.
I think it's really good, especially considering how rocky the format started for me.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like I could just not buy some wins, and I had a bunch of O2s early on. So to make up for all that and end up at that high of a win rate is pretty good.
Yeah. So do you think that's it? Do you think you won't be able to get another HOU draft in before Ixalan drops?
No, I probably will. And I think I actually like HOU draft better than the Modern Cube, which says a lot for HOU draft, I think.
For sure. Should we take the opportunity now to just chat about Modern Cube real quick?
Yeah, let's do it.
So what has your experience been? I don't know how many drafts you've gotten in. I've only gotten in a handful.
I've done 1, and I drafted a very good red-white control deck, and I should be 2-0, but I'm a bad Magic player. I was playing on stream, and I have some Mana Rocks and some Wrath and a Wildfire and some Planeswalkers and some removal, mm-hmm. Oblivion Ring type effects. My deck's good, and I was in a situation where I had the option to, I don't remember, use a card like Oblivion Ring or a Planeswalker or something. I don't remember what it was. And I used it on the wrong thing, and Dr. Katz was in chat, and he was like, no, you should do this. And I had already clicked, and he was right. And the line I took was, obviously not correct, but my opponent had to have a removal spell to punish it, and they did.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I should be 2-0, but I'm 1-1.
Gotcha.
But yeah, the format's kind of shaken out how I remembered it last time, which was that it's very aggressive and rewards being proactive. What's your experience been?
Yeah, so it seems like, as you predicted when you were talking about the green decks, that like green ramp is one of the only broken things you can do in the cube. And I would sort of extend that to the few mana rocks that are in the cube. That artifact mana, that fast mana thing, feels like one of the only like quote unquote busted things you can do in this format. So I think those are pretty high picks, and I've gravitated towards those more often than not. But you gotta be proactive in this cube. It's really hard to like sit back on a draw go deck. I was telling you I drafted this like really sweet near mono blue deck that just promptly O3'd. Just like, if your opponent sticks one threat that you can't deal with, then, or that you like haven't countered or whatever, they get ahead of you and you don't have a way to recover from that, really. So it's really tough to combat the good aggro red decks and white decks that exist.
Yeah, I remember having that exact same blue deck that you're describing in the last iteration of the Modern Cube and also going 0-3.
It's just like, yeah, which kind of, like, I don't know, it kind of sucks. Like, it's fun and all to draft a sweet monocolored streamlined deck, but it takes the fun out of drafting, I think, when you just, like, are limited. You know you're red, so you're limited to two picks each pack or whatever. So it's not my most favorite way to play Cube.
Well, sure, and I think it also is, like, a very different cube experience than the vintage cube, I think, which is both my favorite and your favorite, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think this rewards a very different style of drafting than the vintage cube. So I always struggle like fighting my natural cube tendencies in this modern cube, because I don't think my natural cube tendencies are what's good in the modern cube.
Do you mean like your natural cube tendencies being like staying open or like valuing mana fixing, things like that? Or no, what?
Yeah, just like dirtling around and trying to do busted stuff. Like, I don't think this cube is for that. I think this cube is for like beating down. Like, I think beatdown decks with good creatures and good answers are the place to be.
Yeah, for sure.
And like having singular threats. Like, it's so hard to get card advantage in this cube.
Mm-hmm.
Like a Wrath. Like, if you have a Wrath, like, I always feel like I have to fire my Wrath off when they have one creature on the board or two creatures on the board. Like, I never get to a situation where I'm getting a 3-for-1 off my Wrath or anything like that.
Yeah. Well, I will certainly still be playing some amount of this cube, even though it's not my favorite. It is still cube after all.
Yeah, for sure. I'll probably be bouncing back and forth, but I do think I like HOU draft more.
Yeah. How lucky to start the podcast when we did in like one of, if not the best limited formats of all time.
Yeah, for sure. And another quick note about the Modern Cube, the Saheeli Rai, Felidar Guardian combo is gone. So even one of the other things we like to do is out of the Modern Cube.
Right. So as we recorded our like intro to Cube podcast last week, was before they had released the updates for the Modern Cube, which dropped. And so they put a bunch of HOU Amonkhet cards in there. And one of the things that got the axe was the Saheeli Rai, Felidar Guardian combo. But that whole list can be found on mtgo.com.
Yeah, and I do really like a lot of the cards that I saw going through the one draft that I did. You know, I was thinking, oh, that'd fit really well in this deck. Like, and I was super excited to see Wander and Death in there. I think Wander and Death might be like the nuts in this cube.
Yeah, it does seem good, except I think black is like not very good. But it also made me think about the cycling lands from Amonkhet that can be fetched, which I like totally forgot was a thing. I forgot that they were like island swamps or whatever. But that's so relevant for cube.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so enough about Modern Cube. Let's send off Hour of Devastation in spectacular fashion, because that's what it deserves.
Yeah, for sure. It was one of the best draft formats I've drafted, I think. Or my favorite, anyway. I don't know about best or whatnot. Easily in my top five, probably in my top three. I don't know, it's hard to say, because I've drafted this way more than I've ever drafted any other format, because we started the podcast. But,
right,
like, the fact that, for me, like, 90 drafts in a format was a lot. And the fact that I was not remotely bored, I feel like I could do another 90 and I would not be tired of the format.
As someone who has done another 90, I can tell you won't be tired of the format. All right, so we've got a couple things we want to do for our final Hour of Devastation roundtable. And the first thing I think we need to do is discuss the great uncommon debate of Hour of Devastation, which is, in one corner, Team Sand Strangler, and in the other corner, Team Banewhip Punisher.
I will be representing Team Banewhip.
I will be representing Team Sand Strangler. Though, spoiler alert, in prepping for this argument, I was making like a pro and con list. It's really close, man. It's hard for me to figure out which one is better. I really think this is a lot closer than people make it out to be. So what sort of spawns this?
Well, let's start with the fact that I'm so confident in the fact that Bane Whip Punisher is better that I did not feel the need to make a pro and a con list, because I'm certain the pros come out on Bane Whip Punisher's side.
Jeez, I'm scared. I don't think I'm gonna rep Sand Strangler too good, but I've got the entire Magic community, the Magic Pro community behind me, and that Sand Strangler is better.
You do. That's a strong vote in your favor.
Strong vote for Team Strangler. All right, why don't you, do you want to start us off with Bane Whip? Mr. No Prep?
Yeah, so Bane Whip Punisher is, I think, everything that you want in this format. So the format we've decided is slow, and you're trying to build controlling decks that will beat aggro decks and beat the other controlling decks, and I think Bane Whip Punisher excels at both of those things. As a 3-drop that comes down and punishes X1s, if your opponent is on the Oketra's Avenger beatdown plan, you playing a 3-mana 2-2 that kills their thing, like a mini Flame Tongue Kavu, is very good. And it stays around on the board, potentially for later shenanigans in that instance, if you've got like a Splendid Agony in your deck, or if your opponent has good creatures that puts -1/-1 counters on themselves, it's still a relevant card on the battlefield as a 2-2 with its ability. It's very easy for you to put -1/-1 counters on your opponent's things, or for your opponent to have cards that incidentally get -1/-1 counters. And then on the other side of things, if you're in the control versus control matchup, you play it. It's 2 black-black, kill something dead. Now, which suffers a little bit against Eternalize cards. I would say that's a knock against it. But any other thing, you want a Sifter Worm dead, Sifter Worm's dead. You want a Greater Sandworm dead, Greater Sandworm's dead. And then on top of that, I think it's fairly likely that if you get a Bane Whip Punisher, that you will probably be able to pick up a Wandering Death in the Amonkhet packs, or a Gravedigger in the Amonkhet packs, and it excels with both of those cards. And that's when it turns really, really nasty if you have those kind of combos with it.
Does anything change your feeling or downgrade your feeling about Bane Whip Punisher based on the fact that red is a better color than black?
No, not really. I don't really feel that way about drafting. Like, I'm trying to draft what's open. Mm-hmm. So, like, we're talking about the pack one, pick one debate here, right? So,
yes.
Maybe that's even a point in Bane Whip Punisher's favor, that black is probably more likely to be open than red.
Yeah, that's an interesting point for sure.
I mean, probably not what you want. You want to be taking objectively the most powerful card, pack one, pick one, I think. But I would call it kind of a wash that maybe Bane Whip Punisher's in a weaker color. Because if it's in a weaker color, it's more likely to be open. And, you know, if you're taking the card that's in a better color, you're more likely to be cut. So I would call that a tie almost.
All right. So I was trying to think about this a little like methodically in terms of trying to match them up against each other. So what's the best case for Sand Strangler is it kills an X3 at most, and leaves behind a like fairly relevant body as a 3-3, right?
Yes. So I think Sand Strangler excels in aggro. Like when you go 2-drop, 3-drop, Sand Strangler.
For sure. Yeah. So like that the ceiling for Sand Strangler is very high in aggressive decks, definitely, because it leaves behind a pretty big body and can do that while getting rid of a bigger threat. Whereas like Bane Whip Punisher is leaving behind a small body, getting rid of a smaller threat, probably.
Yes.
Sand Strangler's worst case scenario is it's a Hill Giant, or it just sits in your hand while you hope to draw a desert, or it doesn't kill the thing you need to kill.
Right, it's got serious setup cost. Mm-hmm. I think without 5 deserts in your deck, I don't know that you can count on reliably curving out with Sand Strangler.
You can't count on curving out with it, but that's like I feel like this isn't terrible if it's not on turn 4.
No, but I don't think it's great. I think if it's not on turn 4, Bane Whip Punisher is probably going to be better.
Interesting. Yeah, I think one of the things that I think is a nod for Sand Strangler is that it is better on the splash because of the Bane Whip Punisher, like, kill it dead thing. If it's on the splash, then it's taking 2 turns to do that.
Yes, certainly a nod for Sand Strangler, I would agree.
Yeah. So then the best case for Bane Whip is sort of what you discussed, is that it kills an X1 and then can kill something else that has a counter on it. So it's a 2-for-1, and then if you also have ways to wander or grave dig it back, then you're getting value off of it. But right. That's sort of like, I mean, that's still setup cost like Sand Strangler has with deserts, and you can make the same argument with Sand Strangler, except that Sand Strangler doesn't put itself in the graveyard the way that Bane Whip does. What's the worst case scenario for Bane Whip Punisher?
That you're wanting to beat down, and it doesn't beat down very well. I mean, if you're ahead and you need to kill your opponent quickly, it's not really helping you do that. But I mean, at worst, it's either picking off an X1 or trading 1-for-1 with their best card on the battlefield.
Yeah, or like they've got a bunch of like, I don't know, 2/2s or 3/3s that like, it's like, I want to put a counter on something, I can't kill something dead, but I also am not interested in like blowing this up to kill that 2/2 or 3/3 or whatever. I feel like I've been in those scenarios before where I'm like, well, I guess I play this Bane Whip Punisher and put this counter on this thing that I don't really care about that much.
Right, so it's, but at worst case scenario there, it's trading one for one.
Yes, for sure.
Which Sand Strangler probably could do as a Hill Giant also.
Yes, and there's, like, things to be said about other cute interactions that Bane Whip gets to do, where, like, you get to cast it, put the counter on their big thing, and then in combat, chump something else, and then sacrifice it to kill the thing you put the counter on, so it's, like, acting like a fog plus a removal spell, or a life gain plus removal spell in that scenario.
So, ultimately, to me, I would categorize Bane Whip Punisher maybe as a slightly weaker card overall that is way more flexible and has less setup cost. And that's what I'm interested in pack one, pick one.
Yeah. It's so funny. So it sort of started because you and I were both, weeks ago, both on Team Bane Whip.
Yes, and then you abandoned me.
And then I abandoned you because, so I was faced with this pick on stream, and just pack one, pick one. It just felt like Sand Strangler. I can't explain it other than I just like looked at the pack and I was like, when I actually am seeing these two cards side by side, it feels like Sand Strangler is the pick. Like, that the setup cost for it doesn't feel that high when it's pack one, pick one, because I know I have it first, so I know how I need to prioritize deserts. And I've made that pick, I think, twice, and not regretted it, because they're both powerful cards. I think that's sort of the thing. The biggest takeaway is how close these two cards are, and I don't think that that is... I think that a lot of it comes from the hyperbole that some pros use, like, I think Ben Stark, for one, would be someone who like talks about like Sand Strangler's the best uncommon, not close. That's a phrase that he has uttered, I believe. But like that, it just seems to be a general consensus that Sand Strangler is the best one. So I think that that's when I abandoned the Team Bane Whip. But then today, when I went to put the like list down, I was like, I came down with exactly what you said. Like Bane Whip Punisher is just way more flexible, and yeah, it like is slightly less powerful. But the fact that it has so many different ways to be used puts it over the top for me.
So wait, are you telling me you're back on Team Bane Whip?
Yeah, the sixth sense twist ending to this podcast is that I'm on Team Bane Whip, Ben.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm back.
I did not know that.
Yeah, I know.
Welcome home, my friend.
Thank you. I'm sorry. I'm sorry that I strayed, and I'm happy to be back.
Yes. Well, team casual repping Bane Whip. The pros can have their Sand Stranglers.
Bane Whip for life, dude.
Awesome.
All right. We got something else we want to do here?
Yeah, we're going to take a quick look here at Shota Yasuoka's draft. This was a wild one. You want to kind of set it up for us?
Yeah, so this was actually recommended to us by a listener on Twitter that we should take a look at it. I don't think either of us were watching the coverage of the Japan Nationals this weekend, but I was like, all right, I'm intrigued. So I pulled up the draft viewer and took a look. And the first few picks, I was like, I don't see what's so remarkable about this. And then it took a turn. So I wanted to talk about it. And even in the pre-show of you and I discussing it, it sounded like we had some different ideas even among ourselves. So I'm curious to see how this shakes out. So we're going to take a seat at the round table in day two of the Japan Nationals at Shota Yasuoka's draft seat. So pick one, we've got Open Fire, Puncturing Blow, Ronus' Stalwart, Sinuous Striker, and Dream Stealer, all as cards that he pulls to the front.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty easy Dream Stealer. Is that what you would be on as well?
That's what I would be on. I think this is an interesting point to talk about the cycle of rare Eternalizers if we want to, about like, I think at a certain point I said that I would take all of them over all uncommons and commons, and I think I'm probably not as high on that for the full cycle, but Dream Stealer I think I am above all uncommons and commons.
I think so as well.
Yeah, it's super powerful. So, and that is what Shota takes there. So all three of us in agreement with that. What does he got in pack two?
Pack two, he sees Bitterbow Sharpshooters, Puncturing Blow, Unraveling Mummy, which is the white, black, gold mummy, Vizier of the True, and Aerial Guide.
So I see this as sort of a choice between three picks, sort of. So Puncturing Blow, if this were pack one, pick one, I think I would be on Vizier of the True.
I think so also.
As it like keeps you the most open. Puncturing Blow is like a slight second, and Unraveling Mummy is good if you know you're going to be white-black, and I don't know what the like metagame was with this group of drafters, so I don't know what colors he sort of thought people were valuing or not valuing. But with a Dream Stealer, I think a Dream Stealer plus Unraveling Mummy is a pretty sweet start to a white-black deck. So I would be interested in taking that, but that does pigeonhole you pretty hard if you end up having to pivot off of black.
Yeah, I think for that reason, you know, we talked about this a little bit before we even started the call. We were like deep into this draft because we're both addicts.
Yeah.
I initially said I would take Puncturing Blow, and then you were like, well, isn't Vizier of the True just a better card? Which it is. So I think I would actually be on Vizier of the True over Unraveling Mummy because I don't, second pick of the draft, I don't want to cut myself out of flexibility that early in the draft. And I've been a little underwhelmed by Unraveling Mummy. Even in the best white-black decks, it just seems, like, good to me. I've never seen it be great.
Yeah, I think even as I'm listening to you say it, I think pre-show I was on Unraveling Mummy, but I'm hearing you say it, like, that's just got to be right. Taking Vizier of the True has to be right because it's going to go in, well, it's not going to go in more white decks. Like, if you're in white-black, Unraveling Mummy is going to be better, I think, than Vizier of the True.
Probably, yes.
But there is a chance, if you're the only white-black drafter at the table, which is not insane, that it wheels, number one. Number two, Vizier of the True, I think, is more at home in red-white or green-white, but still going to be fine. But it just like, leaves you have way more pivot options in the next few picks if you start with a powerful card like Dream Stealer and another powerful card like Vizier of the True.
Right, you can go black X or white X and feel fine about your draft.
And go black-white, and you have two fine cards. You have a bomb, really, and then a pretty good uncommon that's like maybe not quite at home in this archetype, but still good.
Yep.
All right, but he does take Unraveling Mummy here. So with those cards in mind, we're moving on to pick three, and we're looking at Oasis Ritualist, Unquenchable Thirst, Aven of Enduring Hope, and Razaketh's Rite.
Yeah, this is a fairly tough pick. So let's assume we have Dream Stealer and Vizier of the True that you and I are navigating through this draft.
Mm-hmm.
I think it comes down to, for me, either Aven of Enduring Hope or Oasis Ritualist, if we're trying to stay on color with our Vizier of the True. Aven of Enduring Hope, and if we're trying to be spicy, I think Oasis Ritualist is just strictly the best card in the pack. And I think at this point in a draft, I'm still trying to take the best card in the pack. So I think I would be on Oasis Ritualist here. What about you?
Yeah, I think this really has to do with like what he feels like the metagame is, which is pretty, maybe like I'm thinking too deeply, but I just feel like we're just now getting at, like, the format has sort of settled from the, like, 2 to 3 week drought of not being able to get a green deck at all in Magic Online. I feel like now you are sort of being, you can get those Ritualists passed to you now. But I feel like this, he has to sort of take into account what he feels like the people at his table are drafting or looking to draft. So you can take a Wasteless Ritualist here, and I think Ritualist third is actually where it is a signal. Like, third pick is where I'm like, oh, maybe the two people to my right aren't trying to draft this deck, which is pretty important. But that does feel like then you're throwing away Vizier of the True, because that's not going in a Ritualist deck, right?
Right, you're giving up on one of your three cards if you pick Oasis Ritualist, but I think all three of them are powerful, so it leaves you a lot of flexibility.
Yeah, so if I am sort of doing that, like, staying open thing, I might take the Ritualist here, but I think Aven of Enduring Hope is totally fine, and it's good with Vizier of the True, and then good with Aven plus Vizier plus Dream Stealer. So I don't know, I think this is really tough. I think if I had gone Dream Stealer Vizier, I would probably take Ritualist. If I had gone Dream Stealer Unraveling Mummy, then which is what he did, then I would take Aven of Enduring Hope.
I agree with that, yep.
Which is what he did do. So he's now got Dream Stealer, Mummy, and Aven in his pile. Theoretically, Ben and I have Dream Stealer, Vizier, Ritualist in our pile. Pick four, what do we got?
We have Ambuscade, Sunscorched Champion, Ifnir Deadlands, Vile Manifestation, and a handful of other black-white cards that are not as good as those. So good news is, we're seeing cards in all of our colors. A great green card, a great white card, and a great black card in Ifnir Deadlands.
Yeah. Man, this is tough. This has been a tough draft to navigate, I think.
Yeah, so from our perspective, or from my perspective at least, of our three cards, if we're navigating our draft, we've got Dream Stealer, Vizier the True, Oasis Ritualist. I think Dream Stealer is our best card, the one we're the most interested in playing.
Yeah.
And so I think I would be on Ifnir Deadlands to match up with that here. Although I do love me a Sunscorched Champion.
Yeah. Well, so I think it's interesting if you take Ritualist as a green signal and then you get past an Ambuscade, I would be pretty interested to grab that here. Because since our first pick of Dream Stealer, we haven't grabbed a black card. And we haven't really seen, other than the Unraveling Mummy, a black card worth taking. So it's like, well, I don't want to get married to my first pick. But at the same token, if Near Deadlands 4th seems like a pretty big signal that black is open, maybe even a bigger signal than a ritualist 3rd that green is open, you know?
Yeah.
So I would be pretty inclined to grab Deadlands here. I think the card is really, really powerful, and I would, especially with the pile of white and black cards in the pack, take it as a signal that those two colors are open.
Yeah, for sure.
But so what are you on here? Are you on Deadlands here?
I would be on Deadlands here, and Shota actually took Ambuscade. So he went black card, gold, white, black card, white card, and then had the option of like great on color white or black cards, and pivoted onto Ambuscade here, which tells me that he values Ambuscade like really, really highly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that he doesn't take Ritualist as a green signal, but he does take Ambuscade as a green signal.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess the takeaway from this would be that he values Ambuscade highly and wants to beat down.
Yeah, for sure. Well, that is what the rest of his draft sort of dictated. He followed these picks up with, he grabbed a Bitterbow Sharpshooter's 5th over a Black Cycling Desert and an Overcome. And then he grabbed an Appeal to Authority 6th, a Kenra Eternal 7th, and then he got an Ifnir Deadlands 8th, which wow. is crazy. Yeah, pretty crazy. So his deck felt like his seat really wanted to be white-black, and it seemed like he forced himself into a green-black shell as Pack 2 shook out. He grabbed, I think, about 3 Lethal Stings and then some sort of medium 2-drops and 3-drops. And I'm not sure if he ended up splashing for the Appeal to Authority in his final build, but he did end up 3-0-ing his pod, which also sort of blows my mind.
Yeah, I mean, guy's good at draft.
Guy's good at draft. I mean, he's ranked number 8 in the world for a reason. So what are us plebs doing talking about him, you know?
It's fun.
Yeah, it is fun. Really interesting seed to navigate. And I think just like, how cool is it that so deep into the format, even you and I, who I think are generally like pretty much on the same page, are still like, well, what about this? What about this?
Yeah, this format's really good.
Yeah.
It's really, really good. There's so many different ways to win and attack it.
Mm-hmm. So as a way to send this off, I feel like we might want to revisit the common rankings, the top 3 common rankings for each color, one final time. What do you think?
Yeah, it sounds great. Why don't you start us off with black?
Okay, so here's where I'm at with black, and I think you and I are maybe mostly in agreement, but slightly different.
Yes.
So here's where I'm at with black. Torment of Venom is number 1, and this lines up with where I was at the start of the format. I had Torment of Venom as number 1. Number 2, I've got Desert of the Glorified. Very, very close with my 3rd common, which is Lethal Sting. And my initial ranking was Torment, Lethal Sting, and Kenra Eternal. And I would not have Kenra Eternal above Wretched Camel at this point in the format. But that's where I'm at. Removal spell, desert, other removal spell.
Yeah, I think early in the draft, I'm on Torment, then Lethal Sting, then Desert. And then once I have, you know, maybe a couple camels, Desert starts to go ahead of Lethal Sting for me, or once I have the Desert payoffs. But I don't think I intrinsically value, I don't know, they're so close for me, but I don't think I intrinsically value the Desert of the Glorified higher than Lethal Sting. So pack 1, pick 1, you're telling me you would take Desert of the Glorified over Lethal Sting?
No.
But that's what you just said, right?
I can't imagine a situation where there's nothing else in the pack better than those two, so it's hard for me to imagine that situation.
Okay.
I feel like I'm fine to take Black Desert as my first black card.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't think I would ever do that.
I think I am now at the point where I think these cards are I think the deserts are payoffs in and of themselves.
So you're on the LSV train where deserts are making you want to move into a color?
I am on that train, yeah.
I don't think I'm on board that express.
It's not an express, man. It's slow, it's smooth. You're going to get where you want to go.
Yeah, I mean, the cycling lands do make sure that you draw an appropriate number of lands, which is a very powerful thing.
Yeah. There was a time in the format where I would never think about taking, like, a white desert first as, like, a white signal. But now I think I am on that with all those common cycling deserts of, like, oh, that seems kind of late. Like, this is a good common. This is one of the best commons in this color.
Interesting. Very interesting.
Yeah. All right. So I think then we may be diverging for the rest of these colors. What do you got for blue for me?
For blue, I would rank Unquenchable Thirst first, Spellweaver Eternal 2nd, and Desert of the Mindful 3rd.
So blue ended up having, like, blue's commons were really weird with, Unsummon went up and up and up, and, like, I think is, like, just creeping into the top 3 for me. I think depending on how your deck is looking, Spellweaver Eternal or Unsummon, like, sort of, I think, wrestle for that spot in your deck, or that spot in your 23. But And Aerial Guide, man, where's that?
Aerial Guide's, like, fallen off the map. I had that rated as one of the best commons initially, and I think it just plays defense so poorly. It's not near the top three for me. But it is a powerful card. It was a weird one for how that fit into the format. I think it just didn't really have a home.
Yeah, that and, spoiler alert when we'll get to green, but Ronus's Stalwart, like, are just two really good cards that are pretty narrow for this what this format is trying to do, I think. Yeah, I also have Unquenchable Thirst first, but I have Desert of the Mindful and Spellweaver Eternal swapped. I have the Blue Desert second. Again, just same reasons as Desert of the Glorified. It's huge pull into that color for me. And I think Spellweaver Eternal has a bit of the, not quite as much, but Aerial Guide issue that, like, it wants to be more in an aggressive deck. And if you're not, those kind of, like, aggro X1 2 drops look kind of sad.
Yeah, I think I've got it above Desert because of how good blue-red spells ended up being. And I think that card is, like, the reason that you move into blue-red spells, or a reason to think that that deck might be open, is seeing, like, a third or a fourth pick Spellweaver Eternal.
Yeah, that's definitely
true. I think I have it second as a nod to the power level of that deck. But I think Blue Desert's probably a more flexible card. So I don't know, maybe it should be second.
It's close. Very close. All right, for green, this is really tough for me, but I still think I've got Ambuscade first as the best green common, with Oasis Ritualist nipping at its heels a close second just because of how much of a format-defining card it was, and Desert of the Indomitable as the third best green common. What about you?
I would agree with all of those entirely. And it's close between Ambuscade and Ritualist, but Ambuscade's so powerful. Like, it just lets you beat down. And I think beat down was a reasonable place to be in the format.
And, like, you want Ambuscade in all of your green decks. You don't want Oasis Ritualist in all of your green decks.
Yep, I would agree.
So that's sort of where it goes for me. But I can't, for the same reason that you want Spellweaver Eternal higher, because it's a nod to how powerful the blue-red spells deck is, well, there's no four-color, five-color green deck without Ritualist, so gotta sort of keep that in check as well. All right, what about red?
For red, I have Open Fire first, Puncturing Blow second, Kenra Scrapper third, and Red Desert at a very close fourth.
Yeah, how much of a snooze fest there that we've just got the same, that's the same, only three commons that stayed the same for both of us from the beginning.
Yep, stood the test of time.
Yeah.
Removal's good is the takeaway from that situation.
Turns out unconditional removal is good. So weird. All right, so for white, I think Oketra's Avenger number one, yeah, would you say?
I would agree.
I've got then Desert of the True at second, shocker that I'm putting the Desert second. And Aven of Enduring Hope, a card that I think didn't make either of our top threes last time, as my number three.
Yeah, I would swap the Aven and the Desert of the True. Aven of Enduring Hope kept going up and up and up and up over the course of the format. I kept talking about how good it was, and then finally I just started picking it like third and fourth. And I think it's plenty good enough to pick there, and I don't even feel bad about it picking it there anymore. I just feel good that I have an Aven of Enduring Hope in my deck.
Yeah. So Sandblast, was that both of our first commons for white?
No, I had Dauntless Aven as my number one common and Sandblast number two. And I do think Dauntless Aven was very good, and I think it was really good in the Exert decks. So I think I was stuck in Amonkhet mode where the Exert decks were going to be the best decks. And I think if that had been the case, then Dauntless Aven might be in our top commons. But that wasn't how the format shook out.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, it says a lot that you're putting a 5-mana 3/3 flyer that gains you life in your top three instead. Yeah, all right. Pretty interesting how that changed. Like, we didn't have any deserts in our top three in the first go at this, or even in our revised versions in, like, the first week of the format, but definitely figured it out eventually how good and how high you wanted to take those cards.
Yep.
What about uncommons? Where did the uncommons shake out for you? How about black?
I think, obviously, if I'm repping Team Bane Whip, I'm so glad you came home.
Yeah.
So Bane Whip, Punisher number one, and number two, I think there are several reasonable options that you can make an argument for. I would like any of Accursed Horde, Vile Manifestation, and Torment of Scarabs, and Razaketh's Rite in the second slot. Personally, I would be lobbying for Torment of Scarabs, but I don't know that that's necessarily correct.
I think I'm on Vile Manifestation as the second.
If Vile Manifestation is as good as everyone says it is, I think it probably deserves the second slot. I just haven't had that experience with the card.
Yeah, it is. It is good, as good as everyone says it is.
Yeah, so what about red there?
Red reds on commons were stacked, not like blacks. So Sand Strangler, number one, and Abrade, I think, number two. Destroying an artifact was pretty relevant against, like, Godfarer's Gift or Abandoned Sarcophagus or Mirage Mirror or Edifice. Like, that came up more often than I thought it was going to come up.
Yep, there were a lot of good artifacts running around.
Like, just 2-mana, 3-damage instant speed was already good, but and I thought that artifact stuff was mostly for Constructed, but nope, pretty damn good for Limited as well. And then nipping at the heels, I think, are Burning Fist Minotaur and Fervent Paincaster.
Yeah, that deck list you posted that had a playset of Burning Fist Minotaurs in it was insane.
I couldn't believe it. And you wouldn't believe I also, like, passed a lot of red cards in that pack, or in that draft. I was just like, okay, well, I know I'm supposed to take this here because this card is insane. And I haven't really played with it that much, but it's just, like, what's so insanely good about Burning Fist Minotaur, and I think at the start of the format, I probably would have put Fervent Paincaster above it, but Burning Fist Minotaur not only beats down so well, like, it's basically an unblockable 2-1 for, like, the first few turns of the game while you have open mana. It plays defense so insanely well. Like, there was, I think, at least one match of that 3-round draft that I played where I was like, oh, I'm not the beatdown. Great. I'll just stop attacking. And it made combat miserable for my opponent.
Yep, it is very good on both sides of the battlefield.
All right, what about white?
For white, I think Desert's Hold first, Sunscourge Champion a very, very close second. Sunscourge Champion is one of my favorite cards in this format. There is no better feeling than facing down a deck that is trying to get you dead and playing a Sunscourge Champion on turn three.
Yeah, for sure. And I think we both had Steward of Solidarity.
Wait, time out a second. You type Sunscorched. Isn't it Sunscourge Champion?
Ben, no one, you can't prove that I typed the wrong thing to our listeners, okay?
I cannot.
Don't try and shame me. You wrote these show notes. See, I can say things too.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Yeah. He's just throwing me under the bus. He's so mad that I was on Team Strangler for a little bit. He's trying to sabotage me.
And then I think, oh my God. And then a Steward of Solidarity, I think, is a very close third. Actually, it's for me, that was also your saying. I'm just reading the show notes now. No thoughts of my own. I'd actually disagree with that. I think Sunscourge Champion is quite a bit better than Steward of Solidarity.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think it's also interesting. I think we both had that Steward as the second best uncommon at the start of the format. And just for the same reasons that the go wide white exert deck wasn't really a thing. I mean, it was a thing, but it was just so much more rare and less powerful than some of the other things you could do in the format.
Yeah. What about greens uncommons?
I think greens stayed the same for us. So, though I did have this swapped in my initial rankings, but Sifter Worm first, what a huge payoff that was for the green ramp deck. Again, a nod to Incidental Life Gain being such a house, especially in a lot of the decks in this format. And then Tenacious Hunter as a close second, though it doesn't, like, Tenacious Hunter is very good. I'm not sure where it goes.
Yeah, it's just a rock-solid card, but it doesn't really have a home, like, for a deck that it goes in.
I really wish that green-black was a thing, because, like, Obelisk, Spider, Tenacious Hunter are just such powerful cards, but Tenacious Hunter, and because it's a 4-drop, I feel like it's competing a lot with Oasis Ritualist. Like, I would take Ritualist over Tenacious Hunter almost always if I was in the green ramp deck, right?
Yep.
And I feel like that's where it is most likely going to go. I mean, I guess it's a solid near top end for green aggro decks. But yeah, I mean, it's a house. It's a 4-mana 4/4. We don't really have those stats at uncommon or common in the set. But Sifter Worm, much better just because of where it's slotted in. And what about blue?
Blue, I would say Ominous Sphinx first and very close second. Our boy, Vizier of the Anointed, that we championed the entire format and still was going too late, even now, this week on Magic Online.
Yeah. People, I mean, we must have convinced anyone who's listening to the podcast that they should be taking it, but it's so good. So good. I still think Ominous Sphinx gets the nod above it, for sure.
Yeah, Ominous Sphinx is just a rock-solid finisher and complicates combat, but Vizier the Anointed is, like, very powerful if you have the time to dirtle, and this format showed that you do have the time to dirtle.
Yeah. All right, so what takeaways did we grab from this format?
Well, I think you should nab the first one here, because I think you I think you paved the way with all of these cards.
I appreciate that. All right, so I think a thing that I learned, this is my biggest takeaway, is to trust R&D for the build-around cards. So a lot of cards that I really poo-pooed in our set review, like Riddleform, Imminent Doom, Abandoned Sarcophagus, I came around to by the end. Like, those are all near archetype or archetype defining cards. Like, Riddleform is the best card in blue red. Sarcophagus is the main reason to get into blue black besides Vile Manifestation, which I could lump into this list. Imminent Doom is worth building around and worth grabbing one drops for to make it work. And I mean, I think you could also, like, you could lump in Fraying Sanity, which you had more success with than I did, but so I wouldn't lump in here.
That's a little bit more of a fun build around. I don't think that really is on par with these other three cards.
Oh, okay. All right, good. I didn't know because we will get to the mill deck in a little bit. But, and things like, oh gosh, what's the 7 mana doubling enchantment in blue? See, this is I don't know that card very well. We'll just call that the Dr. Katz Memorial card. This is the 6 and a blue enchantment that, like, doubles your spells. That is something that I would say I rated low, and I still don't think there's really enough payoffs for that card. But I feel like in the future, I'm going to just trust that these cards are worth drafting around and are worth putting in your decks when you sort of can make them work, rather than just being like, nah, this doesn't look like it's worth it, it's got to be terrible. I just don't think they make those cards anymore.
Well, I think it's format to format a little bit, right, too? I think it varies depending on the speed of the format, right? If this were a faster format, I don't know that Imminent Doom and Sarcophagus would be playable. So I think maybe...
But like Riddleform would?
Riddleform certainly would, yeah. But I don't think we can make a blanket statement that in every format, the build around cards are always going to be good. I mean, there's just no way to know that.
I agree. So, but I think that this could be the wrong way to look at this, but I want to be a lot in our future set reviews and in the beginning of future formats. I want to be more open to looking at how to make these cards work rather than thinking about them as writing them off as cards that won't work.
Yes, I would agree. I think we should be more willing to experiment with them early in the format and draw our own conclusions after playing with them. Because I think you paved the way with these cards, and I think you early on established, especially with Imminent Doom, like that it was just good because you were willing to take a flyer and try it. And I think you had some like trophies as a result of your willingness to experiment with that card and figure out that it was good before other people did.
Yeah, I mean, the amount of people that came into my chat be like, why is Imminent Doom in your deck? And just like, and then people in chat defending them being like, I also thought it was terrible, but I've seen him win with it, so like, I guess it works. Yeah, these cards are real. All right, what else? What's the next? You should definitely take this next one.
Yeah, I think Incidental Life Gain was a huge part of this format. I think it's really powerful, and I think it can definitely slow down a format and stop aggro decks. Like, we talked about Aven of Enduring Hope and Sunscourge Champion. Like, there is no better feeling on the planet than when you're facing down blue-red spells and casting Sunscourge Champion on turn 3. So I think that Aven of Enduring Hope and some of those other cards that have life gain attached onto them or lifelink were a big reason that the format was slow enough to, I think, combat the aggressive exert decks. So not underrating those types of effects in the future. And I think it probably is going to be format-to-format dependent overall, like based on how powerful those cards are, but definitely like not something to underrate. Incidental life gain on a good card is a powerful thing.
And I also think can give us clues in the future to how fast a format will be. I think it's like, I think we, if knowing what we know now, if we looked at a set similar to this, we could be like, I bet that aggro decks are going to be less good than normal in this format because of the prevalence of incidental life gain.
Right. There is certainly a lot of them in the set. And since it's a small set, you're going to be seeing them a lot more, too.
Oh, that's a really good point. Yeah. Well, I guess that won't be coming up a lot in the future.
No, it won't.
but that is a really good point. So this is not the first time that cycling lands have existed, right? And it will probably not be the last time.
Hopefully not. They were a huge hit, I think.
Huge hit and so good for limited and so powerful. So just the next time this comes around in whatever, 5, 8, 10 years, I think it's important to remember that these are very good and very high picks. And I guess certainly format dependent, like if the format is slow enough or is super fast, then you don't want tapped lands, you don't want to be spending 2 mana on cycling lands. But hopefully they won't put cycling lands in a blisteringly fast format anyway. That would be pretty much a waste, I would think.
Yep.
What else?
Unkillable bombs, i.e. the gods, do not make for very fun games of limited. Do you remember in our set review when you gave one of the gods not the highest possible grade?
I believe I gave two of them not the highest possible grade.
Yeah, I mean, they're just like stupid and not fun to play against. I think the only good thing you could say about them is that if you actually did beat one, you got a lot of story equity to tell your friends.
Yeah. I think that's one of the reasons Puncturing Blow was so good. Like, I was sort of looking at Puncturing Blow at the start being like, well, it's like sorcery speed, electrify, that's not bad. And more difficult to cast because it's double red. But the fact that they... It's really good design that they could kill, that it could kill all three of the gods, but they were so oppressive and so not fun, and especially playing in leagues, like, it felt like you saw them so much more often than you normally would. It was really tough.
Yeah, I mean, if you were getting to the finals, which you and I were doing a lot, sick brags.
Right, sick brags, yeah.
Yeah, what about our next one here?
Yeah, so vanilla-esque cards with good stats didn't really cut it here. This wasn't really like previous core sets that we've seen. We don't know what like the new iteration of core sets will be when they start them up again next year, but things like Harrier Naga that I think we were both pretty high on at the start, like a 3-mana 3/3 seemed pretty good. And this was probably because we were coming off the heels of Aggro World Triple Amonkhet, or at least where most people thought it was Aggro World, and they just didn't really cut it. Like the 2-mana 2/2s, the 3-mana 3/3s were not super exciting, and I was often kind of sad to have them in most of my decks. I don't know what you thought.
Yeah, and I think we defaulted in our initial common rankings, like, when we couldn't find, like, what we wanted the third card to be towards, like, just a vanilla card with good stats. Like, a 2-mana 2/2 with upside, or a 3-mana vanilla 3/3, like the Harrier Naga.
Right.
And you escaped that trap with putting Oasis Ritualist third. I did not. But I think, in general, like, Limited has gotten enough better. Commons have gotten enough better that maybe that stuff's just not going to cut it anymore. I would say that might be a general takeaway for the future.
Ooh, I hope so.
I think we've been playing Limited long enough that, like, maybe, you know, or at least me, I'm falling into the trap of Harrier Naga used to be really good. And maybe it's just not anymore. I'm certainly going to be keeping that in mind in future set reviews.
That's really smart. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's good for the game that it's not just, like, 2-mana 2/2, 3-mana 3/3, turn creatures sideways, giant growth, like... The reason this format survives 100, 200 drafts is because there's so many fascinating interactions and card evaluations in draft, in game, that's so much more beyond the random vanilla creatures.
So we both got several cards we hit wrong, speaking of our, our common and uncommon set review. Do you want to run through a couple of these?
Yeah, so, I mean, we talked about a few of these already, the, like, build-around cards, like Imminent Doom, Riddle Form, Abandoned Sarcophagus, all cards that I sort of wrote off in our set review that turned out to be, I think, build-around all-stars for me. I mean, Riddle Form is sort of an archetype-defining card in and of itself. I gotta own up to it. Hopefully this will be the last time we'll talk about it. Strike Riverwinder did not end up being the best blue common. Surprise, surprise. I thought it was, like, gonna be, like, the Hexcroc. I was like, they put the Hexcroc at common. And it has cycling now. That's just got to be insane. It didn't really work out to be that way, did it?
No, I think partially. I think 5 is a lot less toughness than 7, and I think there were a lot less cartouche enchantments running around, which is what really made the Hexproof Crocodile shine.
Yeah, I guess that's true. The Torment cards, like Torment of Scarabs, I guess really just Torment of Scarabs. Like we sort of lumped Torment of Scarabs and Hailfire together as, like, writing them off, but Torment of Scarabs really turned out to be a real card. I think I sort of went too far down on it, then too high on it, and then sort of leveled out to an appropriate rating for it.
We both gave it an F, right?
Yeah.
And then the first time I played it, it went way up for me, and the second time I played it, it went up a little bit more, and then I just stayed way too high on it for the rest of the format because it was such a fun card to play with.
For sure, for sure. What's the next card on this list, Ben? I don't think I was wrong about this card.
Yeah, the next card on this list is Imaginary Threats. I can't believe I gave this, like, the second highest grade we could give. I gave this a 4.5 stars, which is, like, a very strong pull into the color or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, this card was not good. I don't know what I was thinking. I was clearly off my rocker. I have no defense.
But in your defense, everyone, like, a lot of people who do reviews graded this card pretty highly.
Yeah, we were just all wrong. We fell into the trap of it's a card that can win a game and has a very powerful effect that has cycling. It just didn't turn out to be an effect that you were at all interested in, really, in the format. The next one on the list, I think you really pegged and I was super down on, which is Godpharaoh's Gift. I would windmill slam first pick this and give it a 5-star grade. at this point in the format.
I mean, this card is probably the best rare in the set. Non-mythic.
Just because it's colorless, yeah.
It's colorless, like, yeah, it's so powerful. I mean, Angel of Condemnation might be better, but that card just gets killed by everything. Godfarer's Gift is just so good.
Yep.
I just like feel like pack one, pick one. I'm just so thrilled to have it.
Yeah, it's very good. Next on the list is Driven to Despair. I do like this one. I don't think this is very good. And I think I specifically fell into the trap of when I'm watching the Loading Ready Run pre-release, I saw it cast in its best case scenario. Mm. And I think it really warped my evaluation of the card, like seeing it cast in its best case scenario. Next on the list is Overcome. I think you and I and the rest of the world overrated this, but I would give myself and our podcast credit. I think we realized really early on in the format that it wasn't good and adjusted accordingly.
I'm going to give you credit because you played with it before I did. I wasn't like, you were telling me like, I don't think this is that good. And I was like, I don't know, like small sample size, yada, yada. Like I hadn't played with it yet, but you got it really early on.
Yeah, I took several O2 lumps for the team to figure that one out.
Yeah.
Next on the list is Appeal to Authority. This card's just great. It was what Overcome wanted to be and was not, and I think we were way too low on it.
Yeah, and it took me way too long to figure out how good it was and how much of a pull into green-white it was. Like, that it's a signal that archetype is open, it's a reason to be in that deck. So, so, so powerful. Always the best card in that. Didn't you just post a, like, 3 Appeal to Authority deck on Twitter?
Yeah, 3-0'd, easy peasy.
Yeah. Last one on this list?
Last one on the list is another one I was way off base on. I didn't have Oketra's Avenger in my top 3 commons. I was giving it a knock as an X1, and it was just a powerful enough card that you were going to play it regardless of whether or not it was an X1.
Yeah, still good today. Still worth taking as a white signal for sure. We are so sad. Looking at our cards I was wrong about list versus our cards I was right about list is much smaller.
Yeah, well, and I think that's because you and I are... Like a lot, there were a lot of cards that were hard to peg, and I think we're pretty good card evaluators. So I think there were a lot of cards we were right about that maybe like aren't anything to write home about. But right. I do think we got a lot of cards right in this review.
Yeah, for sure. So one thing that I was right about, but not as right as I could have been, I did have Oasis Ritualist in my top 3 green commons. I believe what I said in the set review was people are going to underrate this card, and for a while they did. Like I think it took, I don't know, 4 weeks for people to start realizing, like, this is, whatever, Gift of Paradise attached to a creature, and it lets that, like, triple Gift of Paradise deck is still alive with Oasis Ritualist. And the format slowed down, and so it was even better than it was when triple Amonkhet was around.
Yeah, it was really funny. In prep for the show, I looked through, like, right before we did the Skype call, I looked through all my 3-0 drafts, and it was, like, very much a timeline snapshot of the format. Like, my first 10 trophies or so were like aggressive, like removal beatdown type decks. And then once I got to around like trophy 12, 13, like trophies like 12 through 20 were like 5 color green. Like, and then like my last 5 trophies were like really good, like white, blue, white, black, like some of the powerful 2 color combinations that were good when they were open, like when everybody was trying to draft 5 color green.
Yeah.
So my trophy picks there really kind of showed the evolution of the format. It was interesting.
For sure. And another card that I think we were right about was Torment of Hailfire. Like, I'm still not convinced that this is a card you want to main deck. Maybe it's a card you want to side in, though I've never done it. Like, I've had this cast against me so many times and still won that I think the times when it does win you the game, when, like, anything else could have won that game anyway, pretty down on this card as a viable limited finisher.
Yep, I think it's good in sealed. I think you're supposed to try to play it in sealed, but in draft, I don't think it's very playable. For me, I think I was right about the prediction. I predicted in our set review that the format was going to slow down and be a lot grindier, and I think that's how it shook out. So for me, a takeaway from that is to trust my initial read a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
I've been playing a lot of limited a long time, so I think it took 2 or 3 or 4 weeks before I really like saw that come into fruition, but it was nice like predicting that and then having that be how the format ended up shaking out. And I think I nailed the common desert, maybe not even enough, but I gave all our common deserts in our set review a 3.5, so like the highest rating possible before they started to pull you into a color, and maybe they even ended up pulling you into a color, I think.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was a thing. And then Blue Mill, Frank Sanity, I think was, you could win with that card. I think the Blue Mill Dream was alive and well. I don't think it was, if you're trying to, like, your hardest to win, I don't think it's something you're actually supposed to move in on, but if you were trying to have some fun, draft a Frank Sanity deck, I certainly think that was something you could do, and As evidence, I 3-0'd twice with Fraying Sanity.
I've 1-2'd many times with Fraying Sanity. Does that count?
That does not count. So yeah, let's, before we wrap things up here, let's run down some favorite memories / achievements unlocked during our Devastation draft.
Okay, I have three that I am particularly proud of. One, I sided in Protection of the Hecma in a deck where I also had Overwhelming Splendor, and so I had both of those on the battlefield, so that Overwhelming Splendor turned all of my opponent's creatures into 1/1s, and then Protection of the Hecma made it so that when anything dealt me one damage, or anything dealt me damage, it prevents one of those damage, so it's like a soft lock against all of your opponent's creatures. That was pretty fun. I had another, like, insane combo that I posted on Twitter, like, probably the best board state I had in the format.
Oh yeah, I saw that picture.
I had Anointed Procession, plus Anointer Priest, plus Crested Sunmare, plus Sandworm Convergence, and had cast it an Hour of Promise. So I was, like, making tokens, gaining life from Anointer Priest, getting double those tokens with Anointed Procession. The life gain caused my Crested Sunmare to give me a horse. And then I also had Sandworm Convergence for the double worms at the end of turn with Anointed Procession. It was a beautiful thing. And that screenshot was turn 6.
Yeah, that was, oh my god, I saw that. It was disgusting.
And I guess the theme of this format for me is that I love Imminent Doom, and I have gotten that up to 6 counters.
That is impressive. I think 5 was the highest I ever got it up to, and you put me onto that card, and boy, was it good.
Yeah. What about you?
For me, my highlight was trophying twice with Fraying Sanity. One time, it was a little loose because it was like half Fraying Sanity, half Archfiend of Ifnir, mm-hmm. and my Seers of Last Tomorrow kind of did double duty with the Archfiend of Ifnir. But the second trophy I did was just like legitimately a good like blue-white control deck with tons of life gain, 2 Sunscourge Champions, just kind of turtled up and really milled the opponent out. I had some Ipanew Rivulet, Seer of the Last Tomorrow, Fraying Sanity. I think it was just legitimately a good control deck with mill as a win condition. So that was cool. And then you mentioned the Triple Appeal to Authority deck. That deck had 0 rares, 0 removal, and 0 deserts, and I trophied with it. So showing off how powerful Appeal to Authority was there, that was pretty sweet. That was my last trophy. And then another sweet thing, I just loved playing with Torment of Scarabs once I realized that it was a good card. I ended up in a board state. I had a deck with Torment of Scarabs and a Bantu's Last Reckoning to where I wrathed my opponent, and they were at 3 life and had no cards in hand, so like they just literally could not win. Like I won on the spot because Torment of Scarabs is on the battlefield, because if they drew their card, they had to pitch it. Maybe they were at 6, so they got like 1 draw step, so they mm-hmm. only ever were going to be able to cast like 1 card for the rest of the game. It was a pretty solid feeling, because I love like the Braids prison style decks in Cube.
Yeah,
and Torment of Scarabs felt a little bit like that. And then I turn 5 cast Nicol Bolas off of Oasis Ritualist, which was also pretty awesome.
Whoa, what? Turn five
Nicol Bolas. That was the second time I opened Nicol Bolas, and we forced 5 color green, and I slammed a Nicol Bolas on turn 5 off my Oasis Ritualist.
How did that game work out for you?
I won convincingly.
Surprise, surprise, surprise. Man, I am so jazzed to go play this format, right? Like just like talking about all these cards and like how cool all these interactions are. I just want to go draft again, which is crazy considering I've already done like about a million of them.
Yep, this format is officially great. But I think, unfortunately, we are going to have to end the episode discussing it there.
Well, one format down, another format coming right up. Ixalan, common, uncommon set review next week?
Yeah, I think so. I'm super psyched to do our first like standalone big set common, uncommon set review. So I think in the spirit of Ixalan, we had a suggestion to set up kind of a list of achievements for the podcast, which sounds like super cool to me. So I think we're going to try to, like, as the spoiler comes out, like once the full spoiler hits, try to compile a list of similar to like milling somebody out with Fraying Sanity or combining Overwhelming Splendor and Protection of the Hecma for the soft lock. Things like that that are super awesome, but that don't happen every day. Come up with a list of Xbox-style achievements for Ixalan, and we want your help. So if you see any cool, like, awesome draft, like, live-the-dream-type interactions in the spoilers, tweet them at us or email at lordsoflimited@gmail.com. And then, you know, maybe we're going to try as, like, a group of people that listen to the podcast, you know, if you get one of them done, tweet at us or email us a screenshot, and we'll cross it off the list. And then if any one person somehow manages to do them all, you know, we'll have some sort of a prize, like maybe a draft set from Ixalan, like 3 Ixalan packs. So you can go to your next draft for free. sounds super cool to me. What do you think?
Yeah, I like it. I like doing a, like an Ixalan limited scavenger hunt of sorts to like get cross these things off the list. I love that. And that feels like fun to like get that tweeted at us. Like, we'll try this. And then in the next couple streams, try and assemble some sort of sweet combo that we didn't know was there.
Yeah, be on the lookout for that. If you see cool interactions like that once the spoiler hits, tweet ideas at us or email ideas at us, and we'll have the list, you know, maybe a couple episodes into the format for everybody to start going out and trying to check off. Thank you, as always, to Salty Pretzels for our intro and outro music. Make sure you give it a listen. And he is streaming himself these days, so make sure you go check out his channel on Twitch.
You can also check out our channels on Twitch. I am at twitch.tv/LordTupperware. Ben is at twitch.tv/MrMetronome. Mr. is spelled out. You can also tweet at us. Like we said, we're looking for those Ixalan achievements to unlock. So give us a shout out on Twitter. Send us some sweet deck pics. We are at Twitter at the same names, Lord Tupperware and Mr. Metronome.
Yeah, and if you've got any feedback about the show or questions you want us to answer on the show, give us an email at lordsoflimited@gmail.com.
Thank you all so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week for another episode of Lords of Limited.
Yep, thanks everybody. See you later.